Welcome to Men Alive, a biblical journey to help us conform to the image of Jesus Christ. I'm your teacher, Dr. Jim Cunningham, author of the book Men Alive. Normally, I am the teacher, but today, our host, my longtime friend, Paul Esterbrooks, is switching roles. Paul, what are you going to share?
Jim, this is a special week on the Christian calendar. Most Christians call it Holy Week. I want to share some of the highlights of the major events of this week and explain how it got its name. On the first day of this Holy Week in which Jesus would be crucified, he rode into Jerusalem on a young donkey in fulfillment of the prophecy of the Hebrew prophet Zechariah hundreds of years earlier. In those days, kings and military leaders rode into cities on their magnificent war horses with much ceremony. The prophet Zechariah imagined a different kind of king as Israel's Messiah. He penned a poem about a coming king who would someday triumphantly enter Jerusalem not riding on a war horse, but riding on a donkey's colt. This humble king would come not to wage war, but to teach peace and to bring an end to war and to rule the nations. At approximately the same time as Jesus' arrival in Jerusalem, Pontius Pilate would have also been coming from 75 miles away at the coastal Caesarea to keep order during the Passover celebrations. He would have likely entered the city riding a magnificent horse at the head of the imperial cavalry as a show of power. In contrast, Jesus, coming from Bethany, where he had just raised Lazarus from the dead, rode in from the Mount of Olives on a donkey's colt, so small an animal that Jesus' feet probably dragged on the ground. This was a non-military parade, but this was a real triumphal entry, the arrival of Israel's true king. This is clearly how the Passover pilgrims understood it, and they shouted, "Hosanna! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord," while waving palm branches, thus the name Palm Sunday. And there were two groups in the crowd who greeted Jesus on that first Palm Sunday's triumphal entry. John's Gospel chapter 12 tells us there was a crowd traveling with him coming from Bethany who had witnessed the recent miraculous resurrection of Lazarus. And there was a second crowd of Passover celebrators who came out from Jerusalem to meet Jesus as he approached from Bethany. Both crowds loudly proclaimed praises of Jesus as he rode triumphantly into the city on a donkey on the road leading him to Calvary on what would later be called Good Friday. John's Gospel account of this event also indicates there were two types of responses to Jesus as he rode into Jerusalem. One outspoken group who had witnessed Lazarus' resurrection continued to spread the word about Jesus, causing many people to look for him. It even caused the Pharisees who opposed Jesus to say, "Look how the whole world has gone after him." A second group secretly believed in Jesus but would not publicly confess their faith because of fear of losing their status in the local synagogue. John concluded that they loved the praise of men more than praise from God. Palm Sunday that begins Holy Week is a day of contrasting messages, coming suffering, yet ultimate victory and blessing. Thus, there are also two contrasting responses we can make to King Jesus on this day. We can commit to follow him, even to the death, or we can hide our commitment because of the fear of men. Palm Sunday is thus a challenge to us about how outspoken or not we are about King Jesus. Do we continue to loudly proclaim him as our king, or are we so fearful of societal consequences that we hold back and hesitate, losing an opportunity to make him known? Palm Sunday also teaches us that Jesus knew that he would be ultimately triumphant even before his coming suffering, and as his followers, we can be too. Throughout the process, we are promised a blessing when coming, serving, and boldly sharing in his name and his power. Later in the week, on the night before he died, Jesus and his disciples celebrated the Passover, a family ceremony remembering the night the Israelites were allowed to leave Egypt centuries earlier. Then they had brushed the blood of lambs on their door frames so the angel of death would pass over them. The Egyptians, including their king, the Pharaoh, lost their firstborn sons to the angel of death that night, the beginning of their subsequent journey to the Promised Land. When Jesus and his 12 disciples entered the room where they were to take part in the Passover meal, called the Seder, there was no one to wash their feet, a common custom of the day. None of the disciples offered to humble himself and do this, so Jesus surprised them with his humility in getting up and washing the feet of each of them. He then instructed them that they were also to live their lives with this kind of humility. As part of the Passover meal, Jesus instituted what is now called the Eucharist, or Holy Communion. He took bread that was part of the Seder meal, broke it, and passed it to his disciples, saying, "This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." There were cups of wine taken as part of the meal. Luke's Gospel tells us that in the same way, after the supper, he took the cup, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you." However, on that special Passover 2,000 years ago, another cup is mentioned. It was a cup that no other man could drink from, only the Messiah. Following the Passover Seder meal, Jesus and his disciples ascended to the Garden of Gethsemane on the Mount of Olives. Remember, Jesus had just declared a new covenant involving his blood and body, and told of his suffering yet to come. He is distressed. He sweats profusely like drops of blood as he prays in the garden. Then he utters these words, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me, yet not as I will, but as you will."
You are listening to Men Alive with Dr. Jim Cunningham and Paul Estabrooks. You can receive a free PDF by sending me, Dr. Jim, an email at menaliveundergod@gmail.com. That's menaliveundergod@gmail.com.
The free PDF Dr. Jim is offering today is titled Embrace the Cross. Be sure to request it. Late that night after Jesus and his disciples observed the Passover Seder, Judas the betrayer brought a group of temple guards to the Garden of Gethsemane, knowing Jesus often spent time there. After an identifying kiss on the cheek from Judas, Jesus was arrested and taken to the home of the high priest and subjected to a late-night kangaroo court trial. There he was sentenced to death for blasphemy. In the early hours of the morning, he was then taken to the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate, because only he could approve a death sentence in Israel at that time. Pilate interviewed Jesus and found no fault in him. He questioned Jesus, though, about his being a king, and Jesus assured him, "My kingdom is not of this world." Meanwhile, the loud and growing crowd outside was screaming, "Crucify him!" Not wanting another uncontrollable mob scene, Pilate washed his hands of responsibility and agreed to crucify Jesus, the Roman method of dealing with criminals, but not before being horribly whipped. The whipping was so severe that it tore the flesh from his body. His face was torn and his beard ripped from his face. Thus, at the age of 33, Jesus was condemned to the worst death that only the worst criminals experienced. And it was even more dreadful for Jesus, for unlike other crucified criminals, Jesus was nailed to the cross by his hands and feet rather than tied. Each nail was 6 to 8 inches long. The nails were driven into his wrist, not into his palms, as is commonly portrayed. There's a tendon in the wrist that extends to the shoulder. The Roman soldiers knew that when the nails were being hammered into the wrist, that tendon would tear and break, forcing Jesus to use his back muscles to support himself so that he could breathe. Both of his feet were nailed. Other research says they nailed each ankle to the sides of the main post with 2 nails. Thus, he was forced to support himself on nails that impaled his feet to the cross. Jesus would not be able to support himself with his legs for long because of the terrible pain, so he was forced to alternate between arching his back and using his legs just to continue to breathe. Imagine the struggle, the pain, the suffering, the courage. Jesus endured this for more than 6 hours. From common images, we see many wounds made to his body. A hammer driving large nails through the wrists, the feet, then a Roman guard piercing his side with a spear. And before the nails and the spear, remember, he was whipped and beaten, and then a crown of thorns placed on his head, 2 to 3 inch thorns that cut deeply into his scalp. Many men would not have survived just this torture. A few minutes before he died, Jesus stopped bleeding. He was simply pouring water from his wounds. The human adult body contains about 5 liters, or just over a gallon, of blood. Jesus poured out all 5 liters of his blood. He had nails hammered into his body, a crown of thorns on his head, and beyond that, a Roman soldier who stabbed a spear into his side. All this without mentioning the humiliation he endured after carrying his own crossbeam for almost 2 kilometers while the crowd spat in his face and threw stones. The crossbeam was almost 30 kilos, about 65 pounds of weight, to which his hands would later be nailed. There were 7 significant statements uttered by Jesus while on the cross. As all of this began, he said to God, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." Jesus endured this experience because of our sin, and so that you and I could have free access to God, so that your sins and my sins could be washed away, all of them, with no exception. Jesus Christ died that day for you and for me. That's why Christians call the day Good Friday. It's Friday, but remember, Sunday's a-comin'. He is alive. And we'll finish the grand finale of this amazing story of the sacrificial lamb next week. With Jesus, the road down leads upward. With him, the path of suffering ends in victory. The road to Calvary does not stop until resurrection. So what is Holy Week? It's the week in which Jesus died, a week of his sharing his final thoughts and instructions, a week of telling his disciples, "I love you, so you love others too," a week filled with pain and promise leading up to one final agonized proclamation, "It is finished." With one last breath, Jesus became our final sacrifice. And because of his power over death, we too can now become fully alive. So this Holy Week, set aside time to reflect on what Jesus' sacrifice means for you. Request our free PDF of the booklet, Embrace the Cross. Dr. Jim's here to tell you how to get it.
There you have it, men. Request your copy at menaliveuntogod@gmail.com. That's menaliveuntogod@gmail.com. Men Alive is a production of Go Teach Global. Visit our website at goteachglobal.com. Until next time, I'm Dr. Jim Cunningham along with Paul Estabrooks. Our goal is to be conformed into his image, Jesus Christ.